everyone, and welcome back to our 18th episode of the World of Heritage. My name is Niloufar, and here with me is Stephanie. We are students of the World Heritage Study Program at the Brandenburg Technical University. We have started this podcast as our study project for this semester, querying the narrative scores organized by our lecturer, Ms. Caitlin Williams. In each episode, we have a new guest from the BTU Heritage community, and today we are excited to get to know Shari Boone a little bit more.
Shari is a fifth semester heritage conservation and site management student currently writing her master thesis. We hope that we will hear a little bit more about her topic and the state of research she is at right now throughout the interview. For her background, Shari was born and raised in Australia. She studied archaeology at the University of Western Australia in Perth and participated in a student exchange where she studied at the Durham University in England. She has an astonishing amount of volunteering experiences, for example, as a representative of the Student Council of the Heritage Community. As for her professional experience, Shari interned at the Ministry of Antiquities and Tourism, as well as the Egyptian Museum in Cairo, Egypt. Furthermore, she was a group coordinator for the European Heritage Volunteers and took on three projects in Slovakia, Germany, and Kosovo, where she oversaw the participants. Her work there included, for example, the documentation, excavation, stone masonry, carpentry, and mosaic restoration of heritage sites. We could go on for a little bit more, but we will start the talk now. Hello, Shari. Thanks so much for meeting us. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm really good. Excited to chat to you. I've been doing a lot of interviews with other people at the moment where I'm not usually the one talking, so I'm excited.
Let's just start with the first part of our questions, talking more about the reasons of choosing this master program and your background. Why did you lead to study archaeology for your bachelor?
Yeah, I always loved history. I hated maths. I hated kind of the sciences and stuff like that, but I really loved history. Ancient history, modern history. But I kind of knew in high school that I didn't want to be a historian because that sounded really dull. So it was actually a matter of going to a library one day and reading these little books about different careers. And for some reason, archaeology stuck out to me as something practical and exciting. And yeah, I was about 15 years old and it went from there. So it was quite early on that I realized it was what I wanted to do. But yeah, it didn't start with Indiana Jones or anything like that for me.
Did you have the opportunity to join excavations in Australia, and which were those?
Yeah, so I did one in the UK as well. So I've done a few in Europe, but actually in Australia, I've done, I think, two or three. The first one, which I'll talk about connected more to my thesis, was more of a field school where we did more documentation and survey work of rock art, as well as a small excavation of a cave, a Paleolithic cave, which was very exciting. So in a rural area of Australia. And then the other one was actually Perth has just finished a new museum complex, which looks fantastic if you ever get to go. And we did the excavation of the site before they restarted the building of the new museum there. So that was, yeah, it was quite interesting as well. It was a bit more modern history, that part of it, but which is kind of the dichotomy of Australian heritage and history. That's quite interesting. So yeah, I got a little bit of experience, but would love to do some more at some point.
It still sounds very interesting though. Talking a little bit more about your professional experiences, how did you become a program coordinator for the European Heritage Volunteers, and what is so special about it?
Yeah, so before I even started the year, I basically filled my summer with traveling and going to music festivals and just did not prioritize university-based stuff. I thought, it's my summer, not doing anything like that. But then I heard from all of my friends that they'd all done heritage volunteers projects, and I was so jealous at the end of the summer. So then in my second year, I decided, of course, I have to. And a few friends had been coordinators, and it sounded fantastic to me. I really like leadership roles and kind of taking on those experiences, kind of organization and managerial sort of stuff. So that's why I kind of did it, and I did the application. Fortunately, I was successful, had an interview with Bert Ludwig, who's the head of European Heritage Volunteers. And yeah, then it was just a matter of a training process. We spent a few days in a manor just outside of Berlin, which was beautiful, doing the training session. And yeah, it was actually quite fun, and just learning about, you know, how to not troll people, but work with the participants and kind of keep momentum up and make sure they're all on time and just all that sort of bits and pieces that keeps the ball rolling. But I would say the special thing about European Heritage Volunteers in particular, like I've actually fallen in love with the organization, is that they're mostly really local community-based projects, which is now particularly, I didn't realize before, is my main, the thing I appreciate the most. And so you really feel like you're making a difference on some level, like you're not just doing it for fun. There is some sense of like practical achievement at the end of it. You're helping some sort of project in some way, some local community. So there's a real value that goes both ways. And that's something I really appreciate, is that I'm not just doing it for the sake of it. I'm doing it because it's beneficial. So yeah, I would highly recommend.
Okay, talking about a European project that you had in the summers, since you are in the last semester for the summer semester, are you also planning to take another project after graduation?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of had the option of, okay, I could graduate and go straight into a job, or I could spend my summer doing projects. And I would definitely prefer doing that. So I've applied already, actually. First day I could apply, I did it because I was very excited. So I've applied for a couple of projects in Russia because I've never been to Russia before. And then I think the one in Finland I was really excited about. And even a few projects I went to last year, I would happily go back to as well. So yeah, I will definitely, if they're happening, I will be there. So
that sounds amazing. So talking about your internships in Cairo, what were your tasks there?
Yeah, so I those ones I got just by speaking to people, because they're not that readily available, but if you just ask there, it's possible. And at the Egyptian Museum, I kind of did lots of different bits and pieces. I did some worked in like the documentation center, just kind of inputting information into various archives, which was quite interesting, actually. And then I helped with one of like the small exhibitions that was happening, just kind of overseeing, mostly just getting a lot of information from them and understanding how it worked. And in the context of Egypt, things that didn't work as well, kind of seeing the alternative side of things of, in such a kind of crowded place, how this comes together or attempts to come together was really interesting. But then at the Ministry of Antiquities, I was working with a professor and a member of the ministry there who was working with me to put together a kind of handbook, I guess, or a guide to all the different museums that they have in Egypt, because nothing like this exists, because there's so many different departments that it's hard to get a cohesive bit of information. And because museums in Egypt open and close so often, and there's often reconstruction going on or just something's happening, and they have very esoteric museums in Egypt, which is very interesting. You know, every single singer or poet has its own museum. So yeah, this is quite interesting. And we did a few other projects, exhibitions and stuff, just helping editing panels and that sort of, yeah, bits and pieces here and there. But yeah, it was a good experience and fun to get special access into places that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to.
At the moment, you are working for your internship with ESOIC and Europa Nostra. Can you please explain us these two, or introduce to us these two organizations, and what is your main work and their main work there?
Europa Nostra was founded back in 1963, so it's a very well-established network. It's in over 40 different European countries. And their kind of branding is the European voice of civil society committed to cultural heritage. So it's really about that culture is integral to economics, society, cultural, the environment, and the future of Europe. So it's, yeah, really well connected, even with the European Parliament. They kind of have their advocates for policymakers at all different levels of governance. They give different awards for best practice in the field, and they campaign to save endangered sites as well. thinking about that, then if you look at ESAC, which is the European Students Association for Cultural Heritage, it's very student and young professional based. So it's really about the enhancement of this interdisciplinary collaboration with like networking and knowledge sharing, especially among young people. And in comparison, it's a really young organization. So it's only been around since 2018, since the year of European Year of Culture. So if you kind of compare those two and you think about how different they are, my internship is being the bridge between them. So bringing this kind of really established network to ESAC, to the young students, and also bringing this youthful element to Europa Nostra. So that's kind of my bridge between them, which is why I work mainly with the youth programs and the youth engagement programs on both sides of that. And mostly at the moment, engaging with the youth ambassadors, which they've just launched, the two organizations in collaboration with the European Heritage Tribune. So really about promoting young voices in cultural heritage and what they have to say and their perspectives on everything cultural heritage. So yeah, I like working with organizations that I believe in and I believe in their ethos. And yeah, so really happy to be with them as well. It's been good so far.
That's already it with the first part. Stay tuned. We are back with part two of today's talk with Shari. So what was the process for moving to Cottbus and later moving from Cottbus to Cairo?
Yeah, so I moved kind of directly, I guess, from Australia to Cottbus. I'd been back home, I think, for about a year at that point. And then I went traveling and then moved straight into Cottbus. So I moved to Cottbus with a backpack, actually, at the first point, which was interesting. But yeah, I think for everyone, it was really difficult. It's a difficult process to move to a foreign country. And even though I'd done it before, a foreign country with a different language is a real challenge. And you kind of don't realize at first. And then when you realize the bureaucracy of Germany, it's even more difficult. So yeah, it was tough. And I think, like, from what I've heard from most people, the first semester was really tough, but it did get better, which is nice. And then I got really settled in Cottbus. I really loved it. And you know, I wasn't quite the same as a lot of people who were like, I want to get out of here, I hate this city. I actually really enjoyed it and I got really comfortable and then suddenly had to move to Cairo, which I was super excited about, but also had just gotten settled kind of. So it was a bit challenging in that aspect, but the move to Cairo went quite smoothly, I would say. Like, Cairo isn't far from Germany at all. When you've come from Australia, it seems like a small hop. So yeah, the process actually itself, the process of moving was quite smooth. It was quite easy. It's visa on arrival, so it's not a lot of preparation. They don't kind of allow you to do a lot of preparation with it. So pretty smooth, I'd say.
So talking about Cairo, how many months did you live there? And what was this lifestyle difference from Germany to Egypt? And at the end, which one was your favorite?
I lived there for 6 months. I think it was 5.5 maybe in the end or something like that. And we did classes, I think, for, you know, only 4 of those months. It was quite short, the actual class periods. And then we got to travel kind of for the last month, what people could if they wanted to. I would say it's a huge adaptation to move to a city of that size. The population of Cairo is the population of Australia. So for me, that was obviously hugely overwhelming. I'd been to a lot of big cities before, but living somewhere is very different to just traveling somewhere, of course. So nature wasn't as accessible as it is in either Australia or Germany, and nature is really important to me, just being able to go out for a walk or a hike or even a jog if I feel like it. It's just not quite as accessible in Egypt. Of course, you get the benefits of being able to see some incredibly wonderfully ancient history, which I'd always been obsessed with since a young kid. So yeah, it's very much cost benefit, but I would say I am much more comfortable living in Germany, but I think that's understandable coming from a Western country and moving to another Western country. So yeah.
So when you moved to Cairo, did you struggle finding an apartment, the university, etc.?
It actually was quite easy because we didn't do it through the university, because they just didn't reply to our emails, but we found it through a previous student that had been to Cairo before. So knew the landlord, just sent them a message, got a little tour of the place, and were quite happy with it. So actually that was probably the easiest part of Cairo.
So it was in your third semester, right? How many were you when you moved? And if anyone was left in Germany, when you were living in Cairo, how was your total evaluation? Do you think this joint program is also like heavily based, like this balance is really made sense between Germany workload that you had in Germany and in Cairo? And do you also recommend the students to join this program, especially for this joint program with Cairo?
Yeah, I think you really have to have a passion for wanting to go to Egypt from the beginning. People that had told us it's not a great semester, we listened to them, of course, and we listened to their concerns, but the fact is we'd all joined HCSM because of Egypt primarily. And so that was the huge, like, for us, it didn't really matter what was bad about it because we just wanted to go to Egypt. At the end of the day, I would still go to Egypt, but I would give a lot more warnings because there are things you can be prepared for, which actually weren't so much cultural or anything like that. There were more kind of organizational issues with the university. So if you're prepared about those things, and, you know, we've actually created a handbook, which we were so excited to hand over to the next students so they would be prepared, but, you know, haven't been able to do that yet, but hopefully for the next semester. But if you're prepared, then, you know, it can be a great experience. It's just, I think having patience is the biggest. I'm not the most patient person, but, you know, I did get through it. So I just think that, you know, it may not be for everyone, but if it's something you're really passionate about doing, it's a great experience. It's a great experience for knowing kind of, you know, you see a lot of best practice examples everywhere. It's also a good way to show you the kind of what not to do's as well. Like, Egypt is so busy, there's so much going on, and not always the best examples are visible there. So it's kind of a good way to show you both sides of heritage and from just really different perspectives as well, of course, like not only seeing this kind of European concept of heritage, even having explained to us different concepts of heritage were kind of interesting because we were like, ooh, our professors wouldn't say that. And it, you know, it's good. It's good to not only think of your own, you know, assumptions about things as the way. So yeah, I think, yeah, it's kind of a tough one, but it's up to the person.
I think your handbook will be really helpful as soon as everyone can go to Egypt. So we're already done with the second part of the podcast, and we will take a short break and come back in a few seconds.
Again, we are back and very excited to continue with the part three of our today's talk, where we will talk more about the program with Shari.
How did you find the HCSM program?
So I spent a year abroad in England back in 2015. And from then on, even though I had to go back to Australia for 6 months to finish my undergraduate, I decided I wanted to live in Europe. I didn't want to really go home, but I had to. So as soon as I went home and finished up, I started looking for master's degrees. I looked in England, and that is not affordable. So I kind of looked a bit broader in Europe because I'd loved Europe, and I came across, there's a website called Masters Portal. You can filter by various things, looked for heritage related programs because I knew I wanted to go broader than archaeology. If I wanted to stay in archaeology, I would have to really focus on one particular topic, and my brain isn't focused enough for that. So I decided to go a bit broader and look more into generally heritage, and yeah, that's where the program came about. And yeah, as I was saying before, kind of the Cairo part of HCSM was what led me to that one over World Heritage Studies, and yeah, I guess that's how I got here.
And the courses that you took in the Helwan University, what were they? Were also related to management?
Yeah, they were quite varied. They've got to be, you know, able to be taken across both the universities by all the students. So I did museology, which was interesting, a different perspective, of course, and we got a lot of opportunities to explore the museums over there, which are very different to over here or in back home as well. We did an information technology course, which in theory was quite interesting, but definitely didn't give me as much as I had hoped for. I probably wouldn't recommend it if that's what we're going for. I did history and civilization, which was actually really interesting for me. Again, I love history, so had no problem doing that one. Really looking at kind of the beginning of civilizations, and also a very strong focus on Egypt and its obviously ancient, but its modern history as well, which I think tends to be you tend to know less about because people focus on the ancient aspect. So that was really great. And then we did the study project, which is very different to study projects here at BTU. It's basically you get a vague topic and you get told, go do a project. So it's a lot of freedom, but also, it takes a while to figure out I have all of Egypt at my disposal or beyond if you want to go further than that. And so we actually had a great opportunity in the end, after some interesting issues, to explore something in depth in Cairo. We ended up looking at NGOs and how they were contributing to sustainable development through heritage. So really how civil society was being engaged. And it ended up being a really great way to actually explore Cairo on a deeper level and to meet people who are involved in heritage. So in the end, even though the study project was kind of weird, it was actually really good. And it's a good opportunity.
Okay, so coming to the current situation right now, what is your thesis topic and what is your state of research? Did you do an on-site research or online?
So my topic is Indigenous-led nominations of World Heritage Sites in Australia. And so I'm looking at the concept of going beyond engagement. Everyone talks about we need to engage communities, but there is also a step beyond that, which is empowering communities to lead their own heritage and to be the leaders of their own nominations as well. And this is particularly important in Australia, where you have traditional owners who have now regained the rights to their land and want to give it this recognition that it really does deserve. I mean, there's obviously a lot involved in this, but I'm really looking at how there's kind of the structure versus agency debate, and the World Heritage System in itself is a very much a structuring tool which can hinder the full realization of this, the agency of Indigenous people to be able to have this power. So I'm kind of looking at that debate and how agency is possible within this system. I guess in terms of where I'm at, I'm just over 60 pages in now. So just a lot of editing to go through, adding bits here and there. I aim to finish definitely this semester, but hopefully in a couple of months, just juggling the internship at the same time. On-site visit, I guess that's a yes and no. I actually did some field research about 6 years ago at one of my main case studies. So that was one of the reasons I actually used it. And I used it throughout this whole degree. I just tend to go back to the same case study because I know it well and because I love it. And then my other case study is Budge BIM, which you might have heard of, was put on the World Heritage List just in 2019. Even though I couldn't visit it because I was over here, I did a digital tour, which was really cool, actually. They did this whole day where they took you around the site, not just for me, obviously, but part of a broader heritage event. So it was kind of a way to do a visit in a way. But of course, on-site would be much better. But because of COVID, just wasn't possible.
After finishing up this master program with all this experience that you earned along the way with all these various internships and academic professional experience you got, do you have any imagination for future profession that you want to follow in academia, or personally, what would you like to pursue?
This feels like the extended family question, but it is a great question. And the short answer is that I have no idea, quite frankly, but I'm also pretty okay with that. I'm happy with the things I'm doing right now, and I'm pretty stable with it all. I have a lot of areas of interest. I would really aim to pursue a role in community management, really working more on a local level, using heritage to engage communities, all that sort of stuff. But realistically, I'd probably take any role I can get at this point within my own moral boundaries. I won't do anything I deem unethical, of course. But Yeah, I'm not quite ready to go back to Australia yet, I'd say. I think I will one day, especially to work with the types of communities I've just talked about for my thesis. But for now, the kind of goal, I guess, is a UK visa. English speaking is my forte. Unfortunately, German is not. So yeah, probably try and get a UK visa, apply to work with, you know, like Historic England or National Trust, something like that. Get one of those, you know, I don't want to work in a big government style agency, more on the local level for sure. So that would be the first step, and we'll see how that goes. But I guess personally, which is nice to talk about, I just want to travel again. I want to do some hiking, some big long walks, and go through nature and just kind of refresh, which is kind of why I want to do European Heritage Volunteers projects over the summer before stepping into some sort of 9-to-5 role. Yeah, but we'll see how that goes. To be continued.
What would you recommend new students within the field to do to get settled in the area?
Everyone probably knows me based on social media harassment. I do believe that you should get involved in as many opportunities as possible. Like, I don't think that just doing the master's degree is enough if you want to get a field that you want as well at the end of the day. I do say, like, take on as many opportunities as possible outside of just the standard academic studies. They'll help you really realize, I guess, where your interests are, like what really makes you passionate. And also a great way to kickstart your network as well and just start knowing people. Sometimes, especially throughout my thesis, I've noticed that a connection I have based on someone I met at, for example, the UNESCO committee meeting got me in touch with someone else who was a great network to meet someone else. And it just kind of is a snowball effect where it's just really useful. So being part of those organizations I've spoken about, even, you know, Europa Nostra, becoming a young member, it's free now for 18 to 33 year olds. So good opportunity. Of course, ESAC as well. Anyone you're interested in as well, like if, you know, natural heritage is more your thing, you know, try and join, you know, WWF or something like that. Go to conferences, submit papers, all those sort of things. I think really think about what your strengths are and the things that keep you the most interested personally. You might realize that you might actually come to this realization through a project or a particular class. For me, with HCSM, for example, I really like working practically, but I don't think I could ever be a conservator. I'm just not patient enough to do that. Whereas I'm quite good at the organizational side of things. So that's where I realized that actually the site management or community management would work really well for me. So I think just realizing what your strengths are and playing to those would be the best way forward, and is how I'm trying to kickstart my career, I guess, anyway. For me, opportunities, take them all on. Even if you run out of time and need more than 24 hours in a day.
We would really love to ask you tons of more questions, but unfortunately, we are almost up with the time. So therefore, we have one last question for you. What is your favorite World Heritage site or museum, and why?
Well, I'd have to say the one I'm using for my thesis. It's currently on the tentative list at the moment, so not actually a World Heritage site yet. It's, you know, it's home, it's Western Australia. I love traveling, and I definitely do aim to see as many World Heritage sites as possible when I do travel, and local heritage as well. But so yeah, the site's Murujuga. It's in the northwest of Australia in the Pilbara region. Beautiful, beautiful rock art site. It's one of the largest collections of petroglyphs in the world, with over 1 million different rock art engravings. It is beautiful. That is over 60,000 years old of occupation. It has just this amazing antiquity that people don't even realize Australia has. You know, you think, oh, it was only settled a couple hundred years ago, but oh, the history of Australia actually is so antique. And I think that Murujuga really exemplifies that in a really beautiful way. So I would check it out if you go to Western Australia. It's quite remote, but it is worth it, and it's in a beautiful part of Australia as well. So yeah.
So I have to put another one on my list now. But Australia is on my bucket list anyway, so good. I hope to visit at some point. Thanks so much, Shari, for joining us and sharing your thoughts and stories. It has been great to have you and to get to know you. We wish you all the best and success with your master thesis and your further plans and projects.
Thank you very much. It's been fantastic.
And thanks a lot to our listeners for listening this podcast and supporting us along the way. We had this pleasure to get to see and talk to so many of our classmates and members of the Heritage community already, and we are really happy to share all these stories with you guys. We just want to point out at this community that this community is extraordinary in every way, and we are so thankful to be part of it.
For the next episode, we will talk to Ekta Chauhan from India, who is currently pursuing her PhD at the BTU. She is also a lecturer at the Chair of Intercultural Management and did the introduction coaching lecture with Professor Miriam Fritz-Tretschiak in the winter semester of 2020-21 for the World Heritage Studies students. We're excited to learn more about her, her background, and her life in Germany, as well as her PhD at the BTU.
If you are also interested in sharing your tales and stories, please feel free to contact us. You can reach us on Instagram, The World of Heritage, or our email. So thank you very much for listening and stay well. Bye.